Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I'm still working from my kitchen. Now, the electricity thing, that little crisis is over. Guy came in, had to replace the whole light socket thing in my kitchen, but got the power back on, got the lights back on. But I just didn't feel like moving my computer yet. So I'm still doing the handheld microphone, and I'm podcasting from my kitchen. Anna Karenina, Part 1, Chapter 16. That's what we're talking about today. Just wanted to quickly give you an update about the War and Peace Bogan translation. It's doing very well. A few people have gone out and bought it, but it's still not available as an ebook. I didn't think it would take this long. But Amazon, well, yeah, there you go. There's a one-word explanation. Amazon. So the reason that it was taking a bit longer is because I wanted to put up book two as an ebook, book two as an ebook, as a pre-order, so that when you get to the end of book one, you can press a link and pre-order book two. But that meant before I could publish the first book, book one as an ebook, I had to put up number two as a pre-order. So when I published the paperback of book one, they said this. They sent me an email. This appears to be a public domain book. Could you please confirm this and that? And I responded saying, "Hi, this is not a public domain book. This is a new translation that I've created, and therefore I own the copyright to this work." And they said, "Oh, okay, no problem." And then I put up the ebook for book two, and they said, "This appears to be a public domain book. Could you please give us this extra information?" And I said, "Hey, this is not a public domain book. This is something that I wrote myself. It's a translation that I created. That means I own the copyright." And they said, "Oh, okay, cool." And they approved both of those. And then I went to do the ebook for book one, the last one, and they said, "This appears to be a public domain book. Could you please confirm these details?" And I said, "No, this is a translation that I created." Am I thinking, am I going to have to do this every single time that I publish any of these as a paperback or Kindle? Anyway, so I said the same thing. "No, I own the copyright to this. This is a translation that I've created." And they said, "This appears to be a public domain book. Could you please confirm these details?" So they just repeated the first message again, to which I said, "As I just said, this is an original translation that I created. Therefore, this work is not in the public domain. I own the copyright to it." And they still haven't responded to that. Well, I mean, they've responded to it, saying the exact same thing as they said the first time. So that's the fourth time in about 2 days, the fourth time that they've made the exact same inquiry. And the first two times they made that inquiry, they were perfectly happy with my explanation. And now the third time, they don't seem to be. So Amazon, it just seems to be whoever's working on the day just makes something up. So hopefully someone else is on duty tomorrow and they approve the book. But yeah, so it's just the Kindle ebook of book one that they won't approve. The Kindle ebook of book two, no problem with that. The paperback version of book one, no problem with that. Just the Kindle version of book one that they've got a problem with. I don't know why I still use Amazon. Every time I publish something with them, they give me a headache. Anyway, I'm really sorry. It was meant to be up about 3 days ago, but they keep pushing it. And yeah, I don't know. They're just making confusion where there is no confusion. It's doing my head in. It really frustrates me because I wanted to release all this on the same day. Anywho, sorry about that little rant. If anyone who's listened to this podcast before knows, pretty much any time I have to do anything with Kindle, I end up in this exact mood. Anything with Amazon, sorry. All right, the questions that I asked you guys about Anna Karenina, chapter 16, were these. Who was it yesterday that said he was a fuckboy? You might have nailed it. Sorry about all the F-bombs. Usually try not to swear much on this podcast, but, you know, a couple might slip through now and then. And I thought fuckboy was a pretty good explanation of old... what was his name? Vronsky. Does he really feel as innocent as he seems to? Or does he know he's kind of a sleaze? You know, he kind of... He talks in this way like... Or, well, the narrator explains him in such a way like... He genuinely doesn't think he's doing anything dodgy. But at the same time, he does. Deep down, he does, surely. Sluggy with three G's said, something interesting to point out in this chapter is the difference between Moscow and St. Petersburg at the time. St. Petersburg was a relatively young city, having only been founded in 1703. That makes it like over 150 years old. That's not that young, is it? I suppose it is for European standards, and was more greatly influenced by European culture. Moscow, by contrast, is an ancient city and much more conservative and traditionally Russian. We see this clash where Vronsky doesn't necessarily realize the gravity of his actions in Moscow society because these traditions were not as important in the Petersburg society in which he grew up. Very good point, said Swims to the Marmon Fishy. Tolstoy also shows this contrast in War and Peace. Vinny Too Cool said, I was intrigued when I read the passage that Vronsky belonged to a group of rich bachelor officers to whom such courting was normal, acceptable behavior. I Am Norwegian said, wow, Vronsky seems much less impressive when you're allowed to peer inside his head. My biggest takeaway from this chapter is that Levin still stands a chance. Vronsky has no idea the expectations placed on him by the princess and Kitty, and even if he did, no desire to commit like that. Does he really feel as innocent as he seems to? Or does he know he's a sleaze? To me, he comes across as genuine, maybe a little innocent in how pure his love seems, but there seems to be little substance there beyond the honeymoon phase, which tends to propel itself without any of the hard work and struggle often required in marriage. In other words, he's a steppin'. Dr. Nature 96 says, I'm really enjoying these short chapter introductions to characters. It materializes the character without straying off during a scene. I think it works partly because the chapters are short and contain roughly just one scene each. Okay, so he's a fuckboy fooling around, but at least he understands that he should be thinking about marriage and not just flirting with her. A step closer to being a gentleman in their eyes. Except maybe for the prince. He thinks it's fine to just flirt and because it's fun. I don't think he knows he's a sleaze, especially when Kitty is having fun too and he's not harassing her. The part about the family history is sad, though. That got me to pity him. Swim said the Mama Fishy said, I believe we will get a clearer perception of Vronsky once we are introduced to his mother, the high society lady whom has had many lovers both before and after his father died, which everyone knew about and apparently didn't care. He appears to be a product of the environment he grew up in. The terms that come to my mind regarding Vronsky are vapid and insipid. He's definitely thoughtless. I'm very curious about his mother. Those are some pretty harsh words, vapid and insidious. P. Calvin said, I doubt he really knows what he's doing or how others perceive him. As a wealthy young male, he hasn't a care in the world, really. And life is just for fun. As he matures and grows into some responsibilities, we'll see him develop an ability to self-criticize. I tried listening to the podcast again, but frankly, it was all about everything but the book. I think it was 6 minutes before we got to the discussion topics of the last chapter. Gunnaru said, I thought this line was interesting, bringing with him, as always, a pleasant feeling of purity and freshness, partly because he had not smoked all evening. What exactly were they smoking at the Shabatsky's house? Kadalu said, no, the meaning is that he did not smoke during the evening at the Shabatsky's, and he feels purer and fresh because of this, and it refers to ordinary tobacco. Exactly, says Syntax Approval, exactly, for a bachelor such as himself, he felt the feeling of purity and freshness because he wasn't going out and partying. Pyrrhal Bullfinch said, "That is what is so delightful, that nothing was said either by me or by her, yet we so well understand one another in the subtle language of looks and tones." I like the way this line sums up Vronsky's confidence and naivety, because he has a completely different understanding of the situation to Kitty and her family. All right. There we go. That's the conversation. Better keep moving. Don't want to upset. Who was it that I talked about the stuff that wasn't the book? P. Kelvin. Probably not listening by this point. All right. Yeah, I do tend to go on little rants sometimes, or, you know, talk about other things that I've got going on. But, I don't know. Jesus. Do my best, buddy. This is chapter 17 of Anna Karenina. At 11 o'clock next morning, Vronsky drove to the Petersburg railway station in Moscow to meet his mother. And the first person he saw on the steps of the large portico was Oblonsky, who was expecting his sister by the same train. "Hello, Your Excellency," exclaimed Oblonsky. "Whom are you after?" "My mother," replied Vronsky, shaking hands and smiling as everybody did when meeting Oblonsky, as they went up the steps together. "She is coming from Petersburg today. I waited for you till 2 last night. Where did you go from the Shabatskys?" "Home," replied Vronsky. "To tell you the truth, I felt in such a pleasant mood when I left the Shabatskys that I did not care to go anywhere else. Fiery steeds by something brands. I can always recognize youths in love," declaimed Oblonsky, just as he had done to Levin. Vronsky smiled with a look that seemed not to deny the implication, but he immediately changed the subject. "And whom have you come to meet?" he asked. "I, a lovely woman," answered Oblonsky. "Dear me. Honi sweet que mali pens, my sister Anna." "Oh, Mrs. Karenina," said Vronsky. "I expect you know her." "I think I do, but perhaps not. I really can't remember," answered Vronsky absent-mindedly, the name Karenina suggesting to him someone stiff and dull. "But you are sure to know Alexis Alexandrovich Karenin, my famous brother-in-law. All the world knows him." "Yes, I know him by repute and by sight." "Whose sister, Anna?" Wait. I'm lost. "Home," replied Vronsky. "Who's asking him?" "My mother," replied Vronsky, shaking hands and smiling, as everyone did, as they went up the steps together. "She is coming from Petersburg. I waited for you till 2 last night. Where did you go from the Shabatskys?" "Who's he talking to?" "Oh, Oblonsky." "Home," replied Vronsky smiled. "Whom have you come to meet?" "I, a lovely woman." "Dear me. My sister Anna." "Oh, Mrs. Karenina said." So Oblonsky's sister is Anna Karenina. Okay, cool. "I really can't remember," answered Vronsky absentmindedly, the name Karenina suggesting to him someone stiff and dull. "But you are sure to know Alexis Alexandrovich Karenin, my famous brother-in-law. All the world knows him." "Yes, I know him by repute and by sight. I know he is clever and learned, and by way of being religious. But you know it is not in my line, he added in English. "Oh yes, he is a very remarkable man, a bit conservative, but a splendid fellow," said Oblonsky. "A splendid fellow. Well, so much the better for him." And Vronsky smiled. "Ah, you are here," he went on, turning toward his mother's old footman, who was standing by the door. "Come in here." Besides liking Oblonsky as everyone did, Vronsky latterly had felt still more drawn to him because he was connected in his mind with Kitty. "Well, are we to give a supper to the diva next Sunday?" he asked smilingly, taking Oblonsky's arm. "Certainly. I will collect subscriptions, I say. Did you make the acquaintance of my friend Levin last night?" asked Oblonsky. "Of course, only he left very early." "He is a splendid fellow," continued Oblonsky. "Don't you think so? I don't know how it is that all Muscovites present company, of course, accepted." Vronsky put in jokingly, "Are so abrupt. They are always standing on their hind legs, getting angry, and seem to want to act on your feelings." "Yes, there is some truth in that," said Oblonsky, laughing merrily. "Shall we have to wait much longer?" asked Vronsky, turning to a porter. "The train is signaled," said the porter. The approach of the train was made more and more evident by the increasing bustle and preparation of the platform and the arrival of people who had come to meet the train. Through the frosty mist, one could see workmen in sheepskin coats and felt boots crossing the curved railway lines and hear the whistle of the locomotive and the noisy movements of a heavy mass. "No," said Oblonsky, who was anxious to tell Vronsky and Levin's intentions concerning Kitty. "No, you have not judged my Levin rightly. He is a very nervous man and does make himself unpleasant sometimes. That's true enough. But on the other hand, he is sometimes very charming. He is such an honest, straightforward nature. And he has a heart of gold. But yesterday there were special reasons," continued Oblonsky with a significant smile, quite forgetting the sincere sympathy he had felt for his friend the day before. "And now only the feeling of sympathy for Vronsky. Yes, there was a reason why he had to be either special happy or specially unhappy." Vronsky stopped and asked him straight out, "What do you mean? Did he propose to your belle Sawyer last night?" "Perhaps," said Oblonsky. "I seemed to notice something of the kind yesterday. Oh yes, if he left early and was in a bad temper, it must be that. He has been in love with her so long, and I am very sorry for him." "Dear me, but I should think she may make a better match," said Vronsky, and expanding his chest, he again moved forward. "However, I don't know him," he added. "Yes, it is a painful position. That is why so many prefer women of the demimonde. If you don't succeed in that case, it only shows that you have not enough money, but in this case, one's pride is in the balance. But here's the train." In fact, the engine was already whistling in the distance, and a few moments later, the platform shook as the train puffed in. The steam spread low in the frozen air, the connecting rods slowly and rhythmically pushed and pulled, and the bent figure of the engine driver, warmly wrapped up, was seen covered with hoar frost. The engine, with the tender behind it, moved slowly into the station, gradually slowing down and making the platform tremble still more. Then came the luggage van, in which a dog was whining. And at last, the passenger coaches oscillating before they stopped. The sprightly guard blew his whistle and jumped off while the train was still moving, and impatient passengers began to descend one after another. An officer of the guards, erect and looking sternly round, a fidgety little tradesman with a bag, a peasant with a sack over his shoulder, Vronsky, as he stood by Oblonsky and watched these passengers coming out of the carriages, quite forgot about his mother. What he had just heard about Kitty excited and delighted him. His chest involuntarily expanded and his eyes shone. He felt himself to be a conqueror. "The Countess Vronsky is in that compartment," said the sprightly guard, addressing Vronsky. His words roused Vronsky from his reverie and reminded him of his mother and of the coming meeting. In the depths of his heart, he did not respect his mother, and though this he never acknowledged to himself, did not love her, but in accordance with the views of the set he lived in, and as a result of his education, he could not imagine himself treating her in any way but one altogether submissive and respectful. The more submissive and respectful he was externally, the less he honoured and loved her in his heart. All right, there we go. That's the end of the chapter. Have your say over on the subreddit. Thanks for listening today, and I'll see you tomorrow.